This is the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Stevie Nicks, 69 years old today.
That's right. She's on the edge of 70.
Wow. Nice, man.
Nice.
Very
nice,
good.
Ding. I just love the song. Now, there was a movie with Haley Steinfeld called Edge of 17, and they didn't have this song
yes,
in the movie.
I know.
How is that legal?
How do you, you know, here's what should happen. You're going to call the movie that. You're planning ahead. And by the way, the title of the movie, you can change that up until you make the last print.
Easily.
So you call down to the music licensing people. You find out, oh, the Stevie Nicks song is too expensive. We don't have that much money in the budget for it.
Right.
Okay, what can we get? And then you find out what that song is, and now that's the name of your movie, or you just make up a new title.
Betty Davis Eyes. And just call it that instead. And the audience would be like, oh, I guess that was the supporting character.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could have called that Betty Davis Eyes, but the song's not in the movie. Same thing with Edge of 17.
I was so angry. Now, one of my pet peeves is when the title of a film is uttered in the film. I don't like that at all. But I was waiting for the song, and even during the end credits, I'm like, well, here it comes. Here comes the credits, and here comes the song, and it never did.
I know.
I like Marty Feldman Eyes myself.
That was a great parody.
I know. I loved that. He's got Marty Feldman Eyes.
Marty Feldman was Igor in Young Frankenstein.
No, who did the song? Yeah.
Weird Al, probably.
I don't know.
I don't think it was Al.
It wasn't Al.
No, I will let our Google Meister, Ian, find it online. And I have a feeling we'll not only find out who did it, we're going to hear a little bit of it there any moment.
He's got Marty Feldman.
Yeah. Very funny. Very funny.
Let me see. Bruce Baby Man Bombs scored a regional hit with his 81 novelty record.
I remember
a regional hit.
Bruce Bomb. He actually performed on stage in a diaper.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Did you find the song?
I don't know if this is a good version.
I hear
sort of echoey. Yeah. Right. Edge of 70, you see, because she's 69. That's where I was going. Okay.
We got it.
Okay.
Thank you, Edge. Dr. Obvious.
70. Here it is.
I hope this is clean for your sake.
I think it is.
This has not been pre-vetted.
Her head is growing bald. Her feet are twice her size. She says it's not her fault. She's got Marty Feldman eyes. She'll turn the sprinklers on you and dry you off with her thighs.
What?
She'll confuse the hell out of you. She's got Marty Feldman eyes.
Okay.
Wow.
Pretty good.
Was it worth the wait?
No. Turns out not so much.
Yeah.
However, you could license that for a movie for $1, and you cannot get Edge of 17 for any price, apparently. This portion of the show is brought to you by Window World, the number one replacement window company in the United States, the original $189 window company, online at windowworldstlouis.com. All right, let's dive into the showbiz stuff for this week. Max is here to join us because I refuse to go see the two movies that are opening for Memorial Day weekend, which used to be the beginning of the big summer blockbuster season, but we've already had Guardians of the Galaxy and a couple of other attempts at big-time box office. Last weekend, we saw another big splash. Well, not a big splash, a tiny little splash from a movie that opened, which was supposed to be a big deal.
Yeah, Alien Covenant did open at number one, so I don't want to take that away from them, but it barely beat Guardians in its third week. Yes. So people were thinking it was going to be a lot bigger than it was. Last week, we had my friend and yours, Jim Batts, filling in for me because I was not here. And I know that he talked about Everything and Alien Covenant. And I didn't have a chance to listen, Paul. I'm sorry. I apologize. But I think I know where he stood on Everything. And I think we were sort of simpatico that for the demo, you know, for young teenagers, it's fine. But for anybody else, I wouldn't recommend it. But we do differ on Alien Covenant. I actually liked it, but I like the Alien movies. And so I think if you're a fan of Prometheus and Alien, I would recommend that.
The movie I recommended that I liked last week, which got the highest rating of the four that we did, was Chuck. Did you see the Chuck Wepner movie with Liev Schreiber?
I did not.
I recommend it.
Liev Schreiber is just fantastic.
He's good. And
he's great.
Elizabeth Moss and Naomi Watts are in it, and Michael Rappaport and Jim Gaffigan. A pretty good cast. About the guy who was the reigning palooka of boxing when Muhammad Ali gave him a shot at the title.
And the basis for Rocky.
That became the Rocky movie, which he made no money from, but went around telling people that he was a big part of it, which is in the movie Chuck. So go see that. Now, we have two movies that are opening today, or actually opened last night, in an attempt to get as much Memorial Day weekend money as they possibly can. These are two movies where they had predecessors, one a TV show, Baywatch, and the other, four earlier movies.
Four.
Pirates of the Caribbean movies with Johnny Depp. And I'm here to tell you, I have no review of either of these movies because in my entire life, I've never seen any Pirates of the Caribbean movie or been on any Pirates of the Caribbean ride or the only pirate thing I've ever done is watch Tom Hanks and Captain Phillips. That's it.
I'm the captain now.
Yes. And with Baywatch, the only time I ever saw even a clip of Baywatch was when Joey and Chandler were watching it on Friends in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And they would see it for 10 seconds and they watch Yasmin Bleeth running down the beach with Pamela Anderson. That's
Erica
all I know
Laniac
about that show.
Was on that show.
Oh, yeah. So very attractive women and the Hoff.
The Hoff, yeah. When he was still in the process of becoming the Hoff, really, at that point.
Becoming? You mean calling himself?
Yes.
Did anybody ever else refer to him as the Hoff?
No, he was still a working actor at that point, is my point. And then after that, he just sort of had to become the Hoff.
Yeah, right up until the hamburger on the floor in the drunken video.
Yes.
Yeah. So you went to see both of these.
I did.
Because you sacrificed your time for the good of society.
I am a glutton for punishment.
Which one are you going to start with?
Let's start with Pirates.
Okay.
Now, I did ride the Pirates of the Caribbean ride multiple times when I was growing up. I grew up in South Florida, so I went to Disney World all the time, and I've been on that ride, and it was fine. You know, it's just this side of it's a small world. You know, I mean, it's kind of there. It's sort of short. And I want to start this review talking a little bit about that first movie, Curse of the Black Pearl. This is an idea that Jerry Bruckheimer had to make a movie franchise out of a theme park ride, and everybody laughed at him. And everybody said, this thing is going to be a major disaster and a huge bomb. You have no story here. It's just a theme park ride. Then they hired Johnny Depp, who at the time was basically a character actor doing very strange roles. They hire him, and he starts becoming this effeminate Keith Richards. Now, we all know that now, but at the time, Disney flipped out, and Michael Eisner was head of the studio right before Bob Iger. He wanted to fire Depp. They looked at the rushes. They thought he was ruining their movie, and they wanted Gore Verbinski, the director, to shoot more scenes with Orlando Bloom because he was going to be the marquee star. Well, of course, the movie comes out. Bruckheimer was right. The movie makes all the money in the world, and Depp gets nominated for an Oscar for being so strange in the movie. It also changed Johnny Depp's entire career from being a very interesting actor from the time he was a kid to basically, I would say, a late-era Brando-ish I'm fat and I can get away with owning islands, where he's just kind of boring.
I can't afford the islands.
Well, he's going to buy one anyway.
But I'm going to buy one anyway.
But it's tough in 2017 to remember that first Pirates film was a huge gamble, and it was a gamble that worked out. And I know you haven't seen it, Paul, but I've said since then, I think it's the most pure adventure film, not comedy, not action film, adventure film since Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think the pacing is phenomenal. I think the characters are a whole lot of fun. It's got some surprises. I love that movie. I'm not shocked that it has a lot of bad sequels. Lots of really good movies have lots of bad sequels. But it depresses me. It really does. Because I'm a fan of films, and I'm a fan of that film. That Dead Men Tell No Tales, which is the fifth installment, will be on my worst of list this year.
Oh, yeah?
It's not just a bad film. It's not just a step down from the franchise. It makes me severely dislike what Johnny Depp is doing with the Jack Sparrow character. It makes me dislike this universe. Disney's gotten very lazy. They hit upon something really interesting and then just ran it into the ground. Now, it's not the first franchise to do that, but I was pretty down. I was pretty depressed after this movie because I do like that first one so much.
Well, does it even matter what the plot of a Pirates of the Caribbean movie is?
Well, here's the thing. After that first movie was ginormous, of course, Disney's like, we must make more money. So they bring everybody back and they shoot the two immediate sequels back to back because Hollywood likes to do that. So I didn't have a lot of use for Dead Man's Chest and At World's End. I don't think either of those are very good. They're bigger. They're louder. There's lots more CG, and I just didn't really care. When that trilogy, when the trilogy was over, I was happy it was over because I thought, okay, let's let this rest. Well, of course, they made too much money. So they came back with a fourth installment a couple of years ago called On Stranger Tides, which didn't have Keira Knightley or Orlando Bloom or any of the overblown, bloated continuity either. And it was just another tale for Jack, and it actually appealed to me. And I thought, you know what? Stripped down, I actually like that. You could watch Black Pearl and then Stranger Tides and have a good couple of movies. Well, the critics hated it. By this time, they're like, fourth movie, this is ridiculous. And then everybody, you know, bagged all over it.
But it must have made enough money.
Well, I'm so happy you said that. When this one was announced, Dead Men Tell No Tales, people said, well, why? Stranger Tides was so bad. Well, two things. It wasn't bad. Number two, it made $1 billion.
A billion? Literally?
$1 billion. Yes. $1 billion worldwide.
Wow.
So that's why they came back. Now, they've heeded all of the criticism that there was no connective tissue to the original trilogy, so they brought back Keira Knightley for a wordless cameo. I hope they paid her. They brought back Orlando Bloom to basically book in the film, and then what they do is they rehash the plot of the first one, which is dead zombie pirates, ghost pirates, looking for Jack Sparrow, because they don't have a story to tell. So it really is like a horrible, thin gloss over of that first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Johnny Depp has said that he based Sparrow on both Keith Richards and Pepe Le Pew. Now, Pepe Le Pew, if you know this character, he was the skunk who was lecherous.
Yes.
And basically, just a horrible, you know, anyway, I was going to make a joke about the president, but I won't. But Pepe Le Pew is even more in this incarnation of Jack Sparrow, so much so that I think this movie, Dead Men Tell No Tales, is a little mean-spirited towards women. And I'm a little uncomfortable with people going, yeah, Jack Sparrow is so cool because he treats people so horribly.
Mm.
So this is, it's not necessarily even a franchise that I would like to see die. There's a lot of high seas out there. There's a lot of pirates. Let's just retire that character. If you're going to make a sixth movie, like, and they've proven now with Fast and Furious and James Bond and Spider-Man, we can make nine of whatever. Let's just have a pirates movie without Jack Sparrow. I think his time has come and gone.
Well, that's a really negative review.
I really dislike the film.
Is this a 1 on a scale of 10?
Well, only because of certain films we've seen this year, Paul, including King Arthur, yeah. Legend of the Sword. I still don't know what that legend is.
Neither do I.
I'll give this one a 2.
Okay.
Because of Keira Knightley's wordless cameo. She gets a 2 from me, but the rest of the movie is horrible. No, I really hated this movie. And you know what? It's going to do great business. I was reading a really insightful review of the film that was saying this is one of those multiplex movies that, you know, it's PG-13, and everybody knows it, and everybody can agree on it. If you take your grandma, if you take your niece, you go, oh, look, Pirates is playing. Let's go see it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know anything about it. When you see the other titles up there, like, well, what's that movie about? What's Chuck about? What's this about? Well, Pirates, everybody knows. So, and given the rating PG-13, I do think a lot of families are going
to
go see this.
Do you have to have seen the previous ones to get this?
It's a bunch of pirates, Paul. I don't know. It's a bunch of pirates.
Yeah.
I mean,
but by the way, I want to point this out. I always point this out on, there's a thing called Talk Like a Pirate Day,
mm-hmm.
where people who are on the radio and on TV think they're being clever by going all day long.
Mm.
This whole Johnny Depp, Jack Sparrow kind of pirate and the kind of pirates that people do on Talk Like a Pirate Day,
they're all fake.
They're all from Cyril Richards' Captain Hook in Peter Pan.
It never happened.
There are no actual pirates like that. Again, I have to go back to Captain Phillips.
Yeah.
I'm the captain now. That's the kind of, we got murderous guys who are, you know, Somalian thugs who are trying to take over freighters at sea at gunpoint.
Yes, pirates are horrible people.
There's no singing and dancing.
Yo ho ho.
And acting like Keith Richards. That's right. There's no yo ho hoing anywhere. But the whole.
I hated this movie. I hated it. It'll be on my worst of list this year, mainly because I do enjoy that first one so much.
Okay. Now, before we get to Baywatch, I want to talk about, with Captain Jack Sparrow being an iconic character, I want to talk about an actor who died this week who played an iconic character. And, of course, that's Sir Roger Moore, who died this week after a bout with cancer. Who was best known as the James Bond of the 70s, where Sean Connery was the James Bond of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It became the Roger Moore franchise in 1973. He did Live and Let Die. He did Man with a Golden Gun, Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker, For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy, and A View to a Kill. Do you know how much he got paid for his first Bond movie? Now, remember, the Bond franchises were white hot until the end of the Connery years when they cooled off a little bit, and then Connery left, and George Lazenby did that one. Do you know why George Lazenby got the job, by the way? The guy who did only one Bond movie? The producer wanted Roger Moore. But political instability meant that the location was ruled out in Cambodia where they were going to film. Again, this is during the Vietnam War. Wow. They wanted to film it in Cambodia. And because of that, they couldn't get the permission to do it there right. So in the meantime, Roger Moore said, well, forget you. And he signed on for another season of The Saint,
right,
which was his hit TV show.
Simon Templar.
Exactly. Yeah. So he did that. And they went off and they found this guy, George Lazenby, who was just a male model.
Yeah.
Not much more than that.
You can tell watching the movie.
Yes, he's very stiff. And he came in and did it. But then Roger Moore came back. And you would think, wow, he must have gotten a pretty good payday. Now, again, it's only 1973. Guess how much he got paid?
No idea.
$180,000.
I'll say $180,000.
Very close, Dallas.
Very, very close. There's some change on that.
$180,000. That's the craft services food budget for an, right, for an independent movie. Wow. Now. That's how much you got paid for the first one. Okay, so he did seven of them. The last of them was A View to a Kill. How much do you think he got paid for the seventh movie? Take a guess, anybody.
$280,000.
More than that.
$380,000.
He got paid $5 million.
Oh.
I'll say $5
million. But by that point, those movies were making nine figures. They were over $100 million. And again, we're talking about movies in the 70s.
Wow.
And then it got turned over to... Who the person
Tim Dalton.
Who I think was the next to last of the Bonds, I mean, in quality-wise, that would be Timothy Dalton. And then the guy who should have gotten it before Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, who to me was the perfect Bond.
But Remington Steele prevented him from doing
that. TV shows keep getting in the way of these guys getting their thing. And now Daniel Craig's doing it. Is he doing a new one?
I believe he's doing one final one so he can ride off into the sunset.
Now, I've mentioned this before. In fact, earlier in the show, I mentioned that I'm the Bond sucker. Every time I go see a Bond movie, I say, boy, that was terrible. I'm not going to see another one. And then the next 2 years later, next one comes out, and I go, okay, I got to go see it. So I've seen every Bond movie. And I'm here to tell you that Roger Moore made the fun Bond movies that were almost satires of themselves.
I mean, Moonraker is not a serious film at all.
Also not a good movie.
No.
But it did introduce the world to Jaws.
Yes.
Or was he in a previous movie?
I think Richard Kiel. No, he was in a previous movie. It was...
Spy Who Loved Me introduced him, I think.
Yes. And then Moonraker, yeah, because he did like three or four.
But remember the second movie that Roger Moore did, the first one was Live and Let Die, and the second one was Man with a Golden Gun, which had Christopher Lee and introduced the world to Hervé Villechaize, who later went on to fame on Fantasy Island, but nobody knew who this little guy was at the time. That's a campy and yet very high-quality movie. Much, much different than the kind of movies that Sean Connery was making. And Roger Moore was the perfect guy for that role. But then by the time they got to Moonraker and Octopussy, the franchise again was in trouble.
I was saying on Twitter when Sir Moore passed that when I was a kid, I mean, A View to a Kill came out when I was about seven. And so when I was growing up, he was James Bond. I had no idea about the franchise. I had no idea that two other actors had played James Bond. When they started talking about recasting and we want this Tim Dalton guy, it blew my mind because just being a kid, I thought, well, he is James Bond. And of course, in my film fandom, I've now gone back and watched all the movies. And now I understand Sean Connery and what have you. But when I think of the name right now, the code name James Bond, I still think of Roger Moore.
It depends on what era you started watching these movies in. We'll take a break here, then we'll come back, and you got the review of Baywatch. And I've got some streaming TV recommendations for you, plus a couple of other bits of television news we'll squeeze in here as the Showbiz Show continues here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Ian Geist, Tim Weiland, and Max Foisy.
Talking Pet Shop Boys, West End Girls.
Are you playing Pet Shop Boys?
Yeah.
Is this where we're going with this?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. I mean, I'm down. I'm just surprised.
Well,
it's a bass line here. Boom, 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 ba-dum.
It's a good song.
It's a perfect lead into our next movie.
There you go.
By no means.
Sometimes you know the vocal on this song is that bartender who won't serve you a drink. That's what they're going for in this song.
Don't even know what that means, but it was funny. Our next movie to review for you is Baywatch, and once again, I've not seen any Baywatch at all. So now here's Max with the review.
Well, you know, I don't have as much to say about this film as I did Pirates, because Pirates, of course, were up to movie number 5. This one is based on a show that I never watched.
Oh, you didn't either?
I was, of course, aware of Baywatch. I was probably about 12, 13 or so when it was on, and I was...
Will you please stop doing that?
I was aware of it.
On behalf of the geezers in the room, me and Tim and Dan, stop the I was 12 in the 90s thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a good time to be alive. No, I remember it just from flipping channels, because we only had a certain amount of channels back then, and you'd flip around and you would see Pamela Anderson running in slow motion.
Yes.
With some sort of like synth Pet Shop Boys-ish, you know, background there. But I never watched it because it just looked so incredibly lame. Now, I do think the show sort of embraced its own absurdity to a certain point. I don't know if Hasselhoff ever understood that, but the show was a gigantic success.
It was the number one TV show in the world for 5 years in a row. Not just in America, in the world.
I'm sure that somebody has written a book about Jiggle TV. This is something that was sort of pioneered by, you know, I mean, Three's Company, Charlie's Angels,
yeah.
Battle of the Network Stars. I mean, you've had, and all the way up to Baywatch, I think was also in that vein, and those are always very popular, because no matter where you live around the world, you like seeing women bounce up and down in slow-mo.
I bet you could make a whole cable channel called Jiggle TV.
I bet you could. We should probably do that and retire from here. So I never watched it, but I was aware
I don't know how I explained to my daughter how I've gone into that business. That's the downside of it.
Well, make her the CEO. That's what Hefner did.
Yeah.
He had a daughter and made her the CEO of
I've got a story about Hefner to get to here in a couple minutes. But
So I go see the big screen version of Baywatch. Now, this is what people do. They take Chips, they take Brady Bunch, they take Addams Family. Some of those are good, some of those are not good. And they make them into big screen adaptations. Because I don't know a lot about Baywatch, it wasn't until after I saw the film, when I started reading a bit about it, that The Rock's character, Mitch... Well, Mitch was Hasselhoff's name.
Yes.
That there's a blonde played by Kelly Rohrbach whose name's CJ. Well, that was Pamela Anderson. I didn't know this going in because I didn't. So the movie does this adaptation in pretty much the only way you really could, and that's by making fun of the TV show. I guess in the TV show, there are lifeguards who also solve crimes. In the movie, they think that something is going wrong on the bay that they're watching, so they go to the cops, and the cops say, "Your lifeguards just save lives. What are you doing saving?" You know, and that's very funny. And the movie, for most of its running time, works because it's acknowledging this is ridiculous. It's doing so with Zac Efron, who has done this a lot. Now he's poking fun at his whole image of High School Musical, but I don't know how many more years he'll be able to do that, because of the Neighbors films and Dirty Grandpa. He's becoming a pretty good comedy staple, and I don't mind the guy. I think he's pretty funny. Then you've got Dwayne Johnson, who will be our next president.
Right.
He will.
2020.
Yeah, 2020.
Yeah.
And he, you know, the reason why you want to like a movie like Baywatch is because you like Dwayne Johnson. He not only has great comedic chops, but he's a good action movie star, too. But there's where the temptation sinks Baywatch. They make fun of being an action movie for most of its running time, and then at the end, they really try to be an action movie, where they're foiling the bad guy, and The Rock's going to do it. Well, nobody cares at this point. It's something that the 21 Jump Street movies never did, the Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill movies, which were just comedies the whole way through. Baywatch tries to have its cake and eat it, too. It tries to make fun of the premise, but then really deliver on an action film. So, all of that being said, I am giving it a positive review because I laughed. It's rated R. It's a hard R. It's one of those raunchy comedies. But I laughed a whole lot, and I think the reason why it works is because Dwayne Johnson and Zac Efron have good comedic timing. I just wish it would have ended about a half an hour earlier.
Okay, scale of 10?
I'll give Baywatch, I'll give it a solid 6.
Okay.
And I've got one more thing to say. One of the young ladies who's in the film, Alexandra Daddario, will be on the Max On Movie Show tomorrow night.
Okay.
Whoa.
So tune in for that here on the Big 550.
All right. Looking forward to that. Is it safe to say that Dwayne Johnson is the most successful wrestling to movie actor? Move.
I think so.
Easily.
I mean, when Hulk Hogan did it and appeared in Rocky III and a couple of other things, he always just played Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
But there
he did
been
a TV show for a while. It's Thunder in Paradise or something.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, probably the you've got Andre the Giant and Princess Bride, which we were talking about off the air. But you also
and he did My Giant with Billy Crystal.
But you've also got
no, that was actually George Mirazon. Never mind.
You've got Rowdy Roddy Piper in John Carpenter's They Live.
Yes,
but nobody's had a lead performance. No other wrestler had a movie career.
Box office,
not a career.
Like this, no.
Not a career. Not usually one-off roles.
That's pretty impressive. Okay, I mentioned I was going to talk about something Hefner related. Amazon has a series that they're running now for Prime subscribers called American Playboy, The Hugh Hefner Story. Now, you have to understand, they made this with the consent and advice of Hugh Hefner and the Playboy empire.
Uh-huh.
So when you watch this thing, it's not fully documentary, because you get to see some interviews with Hefner and his daughter Christy and some of the other officials of Playboy Enterprises and some of the other people who worked with him. But you also see fictionalized versions of various things going along, like how he got the Marilyn Monroe centerfold in the first issue of Playboy. Now, I never knew this story. I always thought he had convinced, by paying, Marilyn Monroe to pose for Playboy. No. At the time, Playboy wasn't even taking its own pictures of naked women. He went to a guy who had a calendar photo company that Marilyn Monroe had posed for years before, and he bought the rights to that picture and used that as the first naked woman picture in the history of Playboy, and that made the thing explode right out of the gate.
Ingenuity.
Now, I never knew stuff like that. It talks about how they created the centerfold fold-out and Playboy TV, a show called Playboy's Penthouse, which I never knew that was that. I thought Penthouse with Bob Guccione and Playboy was Hugh Hefner, but no, he had a TV show, syndicated TV show, called Playboy's Penthouse, which was, you know, we're taking the Playboy lifestyle that we talk about in the magazine and making it into a TV show. No dear, nudity.
Dear Paul Harris Show, I never thought it would happen to me.
It's true, Max. It did happen to you.
I never knew there were centerfolds that folded out.
And yeah, and you read it for the articles.
Yes, I did.
I know. Considering with your eyes, you probably missed it. but it's interesting. Again, you have to have the caveat of it's done with Hefner's approval, but it's an interesting biography in several different episodes. It's called American Playboy. Now, the other streaming thing I want to mention to you is a show that's going to debut a week from Sunday on Showtime. This is not streaming. This is cable. It's called I'm Dying Up Here. I read the book that this was based on about a decade ago. A guy wrote a book about the Los Angeles comedy scene in the 70s, which is when stand-up comedy was really starting to take off. In New York, you had the Improv and Catch a Rising Star, and in Los Angeles, you had the Comedy Store, and that was about it. Later, the Improv moved out there. And you had guys like Jay Leno and David Letterman and Freddie Prinze and Jimmy Walker and Richard Pryor and all these people who played at that or those comedy clubs in Los Angeles. This is about a fictional club from that same era called Goldie's. And the woman who plays Goldie in this series is Melissa Leo, who you've seen in lots of TV shows and lots of movies. She is going to win an Emmy Award for her performance in this show.
She's very good.
She's great in this show. And the people who play the comedians, you don't actually see the George Carlins and the Robert Kleins of that era. You see the up-and-coming people who wanted to get to that stage and what their life was like off stage. And, you know, they weren't getting paid to work in these clubs. And so they had to have jobs. And what's it like to work at night at 2 o'clock in the morning as a comedian in front of 12 drunks, but then have to get up in the morning and go sell auto parts all day long. So it's very interesting. It's called I'm Dying Up Here. I've seen the first 6 episodes. It kept me enthralled all the way through because I'm interested in that era. If you are too, you may want to check it out. It starts on Showtime a week from Sunday. The other streaming thing I was going to mention is Netflix has a new movie called War Machine, starring Brad Pitt, which they are promoting the heck out of. I have seen just the trailer for this, and it looks terrible. Just terrible. Now, I don't think Brad Pitt's a good actor. I don't like him in many things. He was okay in the Ocean's 11 movies. That was fine.
Burn After Reading, I think he's very good in that.
Ugh, I hated that movie.
Oh, Paul.
So War Machine is out now, but also if you have Netflix and you're a House of Cards fan, the new season of that will finally start streaming this Tuesday. And then the last thing I want to mention here is that Tom Cruise says next year he's going to make Top Gun 2.
Whoa.
Strange.
So is Val Kilmer going to be back there?
Val has been tweeting that he's excited about it, actually. Not that they've asked him, but...
Meg Ryan, Kelly McGillis, will they be in there? Hmm. Who knows? Why Tom Cruise feels like he has to go back to that well, I don't know.
All we need to know is, will Kenny Loggins again do the soundtrack?
The Ghost of Goose. That's what it will be called. Top Gun 2.
The Ghost of Goose. Dead Men Tell No Tale. Yeah. Wait, that's taken already. Yeah. That's all our showbiz stuff for this week. Next hour, the Harris Challenge, Mike Evans, and Knuckleheads in the News, all on the Big 550 KTRS.